Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long. Judgment Day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Tell me now. Oh, fire!
Tune in.
This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, the Messenger Edition, by co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And next, we will be having a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all once again for tuning in tonight. Sometimes I get a little carried away. The music just does something to my soul, and I get into the music, and I let it play just a little longer than what it should. But it is a message in each song. And it's it's time for us to wake up and teach a new way. And one of the other things that he said that was so powerful is we have to understand that we can't do it alone. We all have to come together and understand this. As with most podcasts, what I'm going to do, I promise, at the 8:30 mark, I will open it up for questions. But I'm going to start by letting us know that there are no shoulds or shouldn't in God's world. Do what you want to do. Do what reflects you, what represents you as a grander version of yourself. If you want to feel bad, feel bad. But judge not and neither condemn. For you know not why a thing occurs, nor to what end. And remember you this, that which you condemn will condemn you, and that which you judge will one day become. Rather seek to change those things or support others who are changing those things which no longer reflect your highest sense of who you are. Yet bless all, for all is the creation of God through life living, and that is the highest creation. Now, then, you know, I've been taught, people say that that they've been taught all about the right and wrongs, the do's and don'ts, the shoulds and shouldn't. And they said that those were rules that were laid down by God. Then I have to tell you that those that taught you were wrong. God has never set down a right or a wrong, a do or a don't. To do so would to strip you completely of your greatest gift, the opportunity to do as you please and experience the results of that, the chance to create yourself anew in the image and likeness of who you really are, the space to produce a reality of a higher and higher you based on your grandest idea of what it is of which you are capable. To say that something, a thought, a word, or action is wrong would be as much as to tell you not to do it. To tell you not to do it would be to prohibit you. To prohibit you would be to restrict you. To restrict you would be to deny the reality of who you really are, as well as the opportunity for you to create and experience that truth. There are those who say that God has given you free will, yet these same people claim that if you do not obey God, God will send you to hell. What kind of free will is that? Does this not make a mockery of God? To say nothing of any sort of true relationship between us? Then you say, well, now we're getting into another area that I want to discuss, and that this whole business about heaven and hell. From what I'm gathering here, there is no such thing as hell. There is hell, but it is not what you think, and you do not experience it for the reasons you have been given. So you say, what is hell? It is the experience of the worst possible outcome of your choices, decisions, and creation. It is the natural consequence of any thought which denies God or say no to who you are in relationship to God. It is the pain you suffer through wrong thinking. Yet even the term wrong thinking is a misnomer, because there is no such thing as that which is wrong. Hell is the opposite of joy. It is unfulfillment. It is knowing who and what you are and failing to experience that. It is being less. And there is none greater for your soul. But hell does not exist as this place you have fantasized, where you burn in some everlasting fire or exist in some state of everlasting torment. What purpose could God have in that? Even if God did pull extraordinary ungodly thought that you did not deserve heaven, why would God have a need to seek some kind of revenge or punishment for your failing? Wouldn't it be a simple matter for God to just dispose of you? What vengeful part of God would require that God subject you to eternal suffering of a type that a level beyond description? If you answer the need for justice, would not a simple denial of communion with God in heaven serve the ends of justice? Is the unending infliction of pain also required? I tell you, there is no such experience after death as you have constructed in your fear-based theology. Yet, there isn't an experience of the soul so unhappy, so incomplete, so less than whole, so separate from God's greatest joy, that to your soul, this would be hell. But I tell you, God does not send you there, nor do God cause this experience to be visited upon you. You yourself create the experience. Whenever and however you separate yourself from your own highest thought about you, you yourself create the experience. Whenever you deny yourself, whenever you reject who and what you really are. Yet, even this experience is never eternal. It cannot be, for it is not part of God's plan that you should be separate from God forever and ever. Indeed, such a thing is an impossibility. For to achieve such an event, not only would you have to deny who you are, but God would have to as well. And this God would never do. And so long as one of us holds the truth about you, the truth about you shall ultimately prevail. Then you say, but if there is no hell, does that mean I can do what I want, act as I wish, commit any act without fear of retribution? Is it fear you need in order to be, do, and have what is instinctively right? Must you be threatened in order to be good? And what is being good? Who gets to have the final say about that? Who sets the guidelines? Who makes the rules? I tell you this, you are your own rule maker. You set the guidelines, and you decide how well you have done, how well you are doing. For you are the one who has decided who and what you really are, and who you want to be. And you are the only one who can assess how well you're doing. No one else will judge you ever. For why and how could God judge God's own creation and call it bad? If God wanted you to be and do everything perfectly, God would have left you in the state of total perfection whence you came. The whole point of the process was for you to discover yourself, create yourself as you truly are, and as you truly wish to be. Yet, you could not be that unless you also had a choice to be something else. Should God therefore punish you for making a choice that God himself had laid before you? If God did not want you to make the second choice, why would God create other than the first? This is a question you must ask yourself before you assign God the role of a condemning God. The direct answer to your question is yes, you may do as you wish without fear of retribution. It may serve you, however, to be aware of consequences. Consequences are results, natural outcomes. These are not at all the same as retribution or punishment. Outcomes are simply that. They are what results from the natural application of natural laws. They are that which occurs quite predictably as a consequence of what has occurred. All physical life functions in accordance with natural laws. Once you remember these laws and apply them, you have mastered life at the physical level. So what seems like punishment to you, or what you call evil or bad luck, is nothing more than a natural law asserting itself. So then you say, then if I were to know these laws and obey them, I would never have a moment's trouble again? Is that what I'm saying? You would never experience yourself as being in what you call trouble. You would not understand any life situation to be a problem. You would not encounter any circumstances with trepidation. You would put an end to all worries, doubt, and fear. You would live as you fantasize Adam and Eve lived, not as a dismembered spirit in the realm of the absolute, but as an embodied spirit in the realm of the relativity. Yet you would have all the freedom, all the joy, all the peace, and all the wisdom, understanding, and power of the spirit you are. You would be a fully realized being. This is the goal of your soul. This is its purpose, to fully realize itself while in the body, to become the embodiment of all that is really is. This is God's plan for you. This is God's idea, that God should become realized through you. That thus concept is turned into experience, that God might know God's self experientially. The laws of the universe are laws that God laid down. They are perfect laws, created perfect function of the physical. Have you ever seen anything more perfect than a snowflake? Its designs, its symmetry, its conformity to itself and originally from all else. All are a mystery. You wonder at the miracle of the awesome display of nature. Yet, if God can do this with a single snowflake, what think you God can do, have done with the universe? Were you to see the symmetry of it, the perfection of its design, from the largest body to the smallest particle, you would not be able to hold the truth of it in your reality. Even now, as you get glimpses of it, you cannot yet imagine or understand its implications. Yet you can know these are implications far more complex and far more extraordinary than your present comprehension can embrace. Shakespeare said it wonderfully. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your psychology, philosophy. Then how can I know these laws? How can I learn them? It is not a question of learning, but of remembering. Okay, how can I remember them? Being by being still. Quiet the outer world so that the inner world might bring you sight. This insight is what you seek, yet you cannot have it while you are so deeply concerned with your outer reality. To go within as much as possible. And when you are not going within, come from within as you deal with the outside world. Remember this that I've always said. If you don't go within, you go without. put it in the first person as you repeat it to make it more personally. If I do not go within, I go without. You have been going without all of your life, yet you do not have to and never did. There is nothing you cannot be. There is nothing you cannot do. There is nothing you cannot have. Then you say, oh, this sounds like pie in the sky promise. What other kind of promise would you have God make? Would you believe God if God promised you less? For thousands of years, people have disbelieved the promise of God for the most extraordinary reason. They were too good to be true. So you have chosen a lesser promise, a lesser love. For the highest promise of God proceeds from the highest love. Yet you cannot conceive of a perfect love, and so a perfect promise is also inconceivable, as is a perfect person. Therefore, you cannot believe even in yourself. Failure to believe in any of this means failure to believe in God. For belief in God produces belief in God's greatest gift, unconditional love, and God's greatest promise, unlimited potential. Then they say, well, I've heard this talk of unlimited potential before, and it doesn't square with the human experience. Forget the difficulties encountered by the average person. What about the challenges of those born with mental or physical limitations? Is their potential unlimited? You have written so in your own scriptures in many ways and in many places. And I'll give you a reference. Look to see what has written in Genesis chapter 11, books, verse 6 of the Bible. It says, and the Lord said, behold, the people are one, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. That does not answer the question of the feeble, the infirmary, the handicapped, those who are limited. But do you think they are limited, as you put it, not of their choice? Do you imagine that a human soul encounters life challenges, whatever they may be, by accident? Is this your imagining? So do you mean a soul chooses what kind of life it will experience ahead of time? No, that would defeat the purpose of the encounter. The purpose is to create your experience and thus create yourself in the glorious moment of now. You do not therefore choose the life you will experience ahead of time. You may, however, select the person, place, and events, the conditions and circumstances, the challenges and obstacles, the opportunities and options with which to create your experience. You may select the color of your palettes, the tools of your chest, the machinery of your shop. What you create with these is your business. That is the business of life. Your potential is unlimited in all that you've chosen to do. Do not assume that a soul which has incarnated in a body which you call limited has not reached its full potential. For you do not know what that soul was trying to do. You do not understand its agenda. You are unclear of its intents. Therefore, bless every person and condition and give thanks. Thus you affirm the perfection of God's creation and show your faith in it. For nothing happens by accident in God's world. And there is no such thing as a coincidence, nor is the world buffered by random choices or something you call fate. If a snowflake is utter perfection in its designs, do you not think the same could be said about something as magnificent as your life? But then you say, but even Jesus healed the sick. Why would he heal them if their conditions were so perfect? Jesus did not heal those he healed because he saw their condition as imperfect. He healed those he healed because he saw those souls asking for healing as part of their process. He saw the perfection of the process. He recognized and understood the soul's intention. Had Jesus felt that all illness, mental or physical, represented imperfection, would he not have simply healed everyone on the planet all at once? Do you doubt that he could do this? And I know Mother Mac in the background saying, no, I believe he could have done it. I know Mother Mac said that. Good thing. Then the mind begs to know, why did he not do it? Why would the Christ choose to have some suffer and others be healed? For that matter, why does God allow any suffering at any time? The question has been asked before, and the answer remains the same. There is perfection in the process, and all life arises out of choice. It is not appropriate to interfere with choice, nor to question it. It is particularly inappropriate to condemn it. What is appropriate is to observe it, and then to do whatever might be done to assist the soul in seeking and making a higher choice. Be watchful, therefore, of the choices of others, but not judgmental. Know that their choice is perfect for them in this moment, now. Yet stand ready to assist them should the moment come when they seek a newer choice, a different choice, a higher choice. Move into communion with the soul of others, and their purpose, their intentions will be clear to you. This is what Jesus did with those he healed and with all those whose lives he touched. Jesus healed all those who came to him or who sent others to him, supplicating for them. He did not perform a random healing. To have done so would have been to violate a sacred law of the universe. Allow each soul to walk its own path. Allow each soul to walk its path. Then you say, but does that mean we must not help anyone without being asked? Surely not, or we would never be able to help the starving children of India, or the tortured masses of Africa, or the poor or the downtrodden anywhere. All humanity efforts would be lost, all charitable getting forbidden. Must we wait for an individual to cry out to us in desperation or for a nation of people to plead for help before we are allowed to do what is obviously right? You see, the question answers itself. If a thing is obviously right, do it. But remember to exercise extreme judgment regarding what you call right and wrong. A thing is only right or wrong because you say it is. A thing is not right or wrong instinctively. Rightness or wrongness is not an instinctive condition. It is a subjective judgment in a person's value system. By your subjective judgment, do you create yourself? By your personal values, do you determine and demonstrate who you are? The world exists exactly as it is so that you may make these judgments. If the world exists in perfect condition, your life process of self-creation would be terminated. It would end. A lawyer's career would end tomorrow where there no more litigation. A doctor's career would end tomorrow where there no more illness. A philosopher's career would end tomorrow where there are no more questions. So this is something that I've always said, and I want us to be very mindful of it. All things, not some things, but all things are working together for the good. Now, we may not see it, but it is working together for the good. God did not make a mistake when we put this together. There was no mistakes made. And what we have to do is remember this. We have to remember this, that all things are working together for the good. And because you call it bad does not make it bad. But well, let me clarify this, because I want you to understand. It might make it bad to you, but in the realm of things, it's not bad. For that person that's doing it, it's not bad at that time. And even if the outcome that that person desired from doing that does not come to fruition, it still doesn't make it bad. So we ought not call anything bad. Because if you, what you have to understand is that what you call bad, if you created a situation that you call bad, then you look on that situation and yourself, because you are the one that created it. So if that's bad, you're bad. And so what I'm saying is we have to think more highly of ourselves, on who we are. Not in that boastful manner, but in that honor manner, that we are part of the body of God. We are all one. Now, I know I said I was going to stop and give some people time if anyone had questions. So if anyone has a question, I'll take it, or I can go on a little bit longer. So if anyone has a question that they would like to ask with regards to what was said or something that came to them, they could ask it now. And since no one is saying anything, I will go on. The world is filled with essentially two types of people. Those who give you things you want and those who fix things. In a sense, even those are simply who simply give you things you want, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, are also fixers. For to have a desire for something is often to have a need for it. This is why addicts are said to need a fix. Be careful, therefore, that desire not becomes addiction. I am saying that the world exists the way it exists, just as a snowflake exists the way it exists, quite by design. You have created it that way, just as you have created your life exactly as it is. I want what you want. The day you really want an end to hunger, there will be no more hunger. God has given you all the resources with which to do that. You have all the tools with which to make that choice. You have not made it. Not because you could not make it. The world would end world hunger tomorrow. You choose not to make it. We choose not to make it. A lot of things we choose not to do, and because we choose not to do it and it doesn't happen, we turn around and we blame God. Why does God allow this? Why does God allow that? And we have to understand it's not God. It is our responsibility. God has given us the gift. We have the same authority that God has. He has given it to us. He created us in his likeness. We don't look like God, but we have the essence of God. And so I leave asking this question. Is there anything too hard for God? And
no.
If there's nothing too hard for God, There is nothing too hard for each and every one of us. We just have to have a made-up mind.
Amen.
That this is who I want to be. And this is how I'm going to present myself to the world as the greatest me that I can be.
Mm.
And if we start focusing on me, focusing on being the best you, and I can't concern myself with anybody else but me, you will see things in a completely different way. You will begin to get mastery into understanding who you are and whose you are.
Yes.
And until we understand who we are and whom we are, we're just spinning our wheels, spending time. And it's better for us, instead of spending time, to be able to use that time so that we can continue to create and be the best that we can be. I do truly thank each and every one of
Amen.
You for listening to this podcast. I pray
thank
that
you.
Something was said that would stir up the gift in you, that you may begin to go in so that you will not go without. I love you all, and until next Thursday, may the God of you continue to strengthen you and show you the way. I love you all. Good night, and have a blessed week. Good night, everyone.
Love you, too. Okay, good night.